Imagine being like one of the most risk-averse investors alive. I mean, a man who is absolutely terrified of what he calls the permanent loss of capital.
Right.
But he keeps almost zero cash in the bank.
Which sounds totally backwards.
It does. That is the paradox of Sir Chris Hahn. He runs TCI Fund Management, and he's built this legendary two-decade track record by focusing intensely on risk first and return second.
Yeah, and yet he stays fully invested in a super concentrated portfolio.
Exactly. So, how does someone who is just obsessed with avoiding ruin manage to sleep soundly without, the traditional safety net of cash sitting in a vault?
It's a great question.
Welcome to today's deep dive. We are unpacking an analytical framework from the Averaging Up collection. Specifically, we're looking at an article in Slide Deck titled "The Stock You Can Sleep On: The Toll Whose Growth Is Free and Asks No Decision."
Quite the title.
Yeah, it is. And our mission today is to completely redefine what a truly safe investment actually looks like for you.
It's just a fascinating paradox to start with, honestly, because it completely challenges how most of us are conditioned to think about risk.
Right. We usually equate safety with cash.
Exactly. Cash, or maybe, sprawling
Yeah.
diversification, like buying index funds. But Hahn's secret isn't some magical hedging
Yeah.
strategy, and it's definitely not holding 50 different mediocre stocks.
So what is it?
Well, it lies in owning a very specific and, frankly, a very demanding category of business. What he understands is that the ultimate investment isn't, it's not necessarily the one that promises to make you the most money in a bull market.
Okay.
It is the one that asks the absolute least of you and of its management team over the long haul.
The least of you. Okay, so to understand what he's actually buying, we have to kind of fundamentally redefine how we visualize a business. Like we need to look at the underlying plumbing, the anatomy of how the money actually moves.
Yeah, exactly. The foundational concept here is that every single business, regardless of what it actually sells, is essentially a flow of capital between two distinct reservoirs.
Okay, let's call them Reservoir A and Reservoir B.
Perfect. So Reservoir A is the toll. Think of this as the structural choke point of the business. It represents your short duration cash now revenue.
So the money you collect today just for letting people pass through your system.
Right. And then Reservoir B is the wave. This represents the long duration cash later secular growth.
Like massive macro trends.
Exactly. The big trends happening out in the broader world that will, theoretically anyway, make tomorrow's toll much larger than today's.
So basically, every business has some combination of a toll they collect today and a wave of growth they're hoping to ride tomorrow.
Right. But here is the key. The ultimate test of a company's quality is the direction of the flow between those two
Like
reservoirs.
direction matters.
Huge difference. In a truly high-quality business, the toll absorbs the wave. It generates far more cash than the growth actually consumes, and that massive surplus just overflows to the owners.
And in a weak business.
The flow is completely reversed. The wave devours the toll. So the cost of trying to grow tomorrow just eats up all the cash you're generating today.
Ah, I see. Let's try to visualize this for everyone listening. Think of it like an exclusive nightclub.
Okay, I like that.
So the toll, that Reservoir A, is the cover charge at the door. You collect that cash right now in your hand just for letting people inside.
Right.
And the wave, Reservoir B, is the growing popularity of the neighborhood the club is in. That's the long-term trend bringing more foot traffic. But wait, if we look at the bigger picture, doesn't every business, good or bad, want growth?
Yeah, you'd think so.
I mean, why would a growing neighborhood or the wave ever be a bad thing for a company?
Well, the issue is never the growth itself. The issue is how that growth has to be acquired.
I get it.
Exactly. This framework divides growth, that B reservoir, into two very distinct forms. The first is what we call mechanical B.
Mechanical B?
Yeah, this is growth that you have to go out and physically purchase. It has to be funded by your toll and carefully, sometimes really agonizingly, steered by your management team.
You mean like building new factories or?
Right. Building factories, hiring massive armies of salespeople, launching super expensive marketing campaigns, buying out your competitors.
Just grinding for it. Think about your own career or small business for a second, if you're listening. If you have to hustle for every single promotion or, grind for every single new client, that is exhausting.
It really is.
That's a mechanical B. It's growth, sure, but it takes a massive toll on your time and resources.
It's heavily constrained by human effort and capital. The second form of growth, however, is freebie.
The Holy Grail.
Totally. This is growth that arrives entirely from the outside, carried by massive secular trends. So think like the global shift away from physical cash to digital payment.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Or the rise of passive investing.
Yep.
It arrives at your door at virtually no cost. And most importantly, it requires zero active decision making from management to acquire it. It just happens.
So if you look at how companies handle these two types of growth, they generally fall into three buckets, right? Along this spectrum of capital absorption.
Yeah, a spectrum is the best way to look at it.
Where do most of the famous companies we know sit on this spectrum?
Well, let's start with the first bucket, the Magnificent Toll.
Okay.
These are your legendary, just unshakable consumer brands. Think Coca-Cola or See's Candies. They have superb tolls, incredible pricing power, huge brand loyalty, but
their waves are actually quite tiny.
Exactly. They overflow with massive amounts of cash today, but they compound very slowly because the secular growth just isn't there in a massive, explosive way.
Right, because a person can only drink so much soda in a day, no matter how much they love the brand.
Yeah, exactly. They are absolute cash cows, but they aren't riding a rocket ship. They throw off all this cash, but they can't reinvest it internally at a high rate because the market is already completely saturated.
Makes sense. So what's next?
The second bucket is the capital heavy toll. A classic example here is a major railroad like Union Pacific.
Okay, sure.
They have highly durable tolls. You can't exactly, you know, zone and build a competing freight railroad next door to an existing one.
No, the moat is incredibly deep there.
But their growth is entirely mechanical. To carry more freight and grow their top line revenue, they have to constantly buy new, incredibly expensive physical assets. They need to lay new tracks, buy new locomotives, maintain aging bridges.
So the growth is definitely there, but it is heavy.
Yes.
And it must be bought with today's cash.
Precisely. Which brings us to the third category, the absolute summit of this framework.
The business model that allows a risk-averse investor to sleep like a baby.
The free surfer.
It's such a great name because it perfectly describes the mechanics. We're talking about businesses like Visa, MasterCard, S&P Global, MSCI.
Right.
They operate in a category entirely of their own. They are structural choke points whose flow of capital widens for free simply because the world around them is transacting, borrowing, and investing more.
The defining characteristic of a free surfer is what we call the capture rule.
The capture rule.
Right. For a business to qualify as a true free surfer, the secular wave must pass through the choke point, not around it.
Through it.
Take Visa. Visa captures the massive global wave of digital payments simply because those billions of transactions physically must run across its digital rails.
There's no other way.
Exactly. Yeah. The secular wave has no other route to get to the market.
Let's bring in the Alphabet example or Google from the sources because it's a brilliant way to illustrate an imperfect capture.
Oh, that's a great example.
So Google search is a free surfer. The growth of the internet automatically flows through that search box. It's captured by their moat without Google having to lift a finger to acquire that specific user intent.
Right. It just comes to them.
But look at Google's cloud or their AI businesses.
Mm.
That growth is not free.
Not at all.
It is fought for on open ground against Amazon and Microsoft. They have to spend billions of dollars on data centers and talent to buy that growth. So that part is purely mechanical.
And that's a vital distinction. If a management team has to fight for the growth, you instantly introduce execution risk.
Right, because humans mess up.
Exactly. You are relying on human beings to make the right strategic calls, outmaneuver rivals, allocate capital perfectly. But if the wave just washes over your toll booth automatically, you remove the human element. You can sleep.
So true peace of mind only comes when the wave is forced through your specific toll booth.
Mm.
But wait, having a competitive advantage isn't unique. I mean, Coke has a moat. A railroad has a moat.
Yeah.
If Chris Hahn is playing a totally different game, where's this unique sleek at night safety actually coming from?
The framework breaks this down into two halves of safety.
Right.
The first half is what they call the floor or the bounded downside. This is what everyone in the market focuses on. A strong moat prevents the business from collapsing. The franchise is durable.
People will keep buying Coke. Companies will keep shipping freight on trains.
Right.
The floor keeps you from going to zero.
Yeah.
But as you just pointed out, a bounded downside is common to all quality businesses, right?
Yes, absolutely.
The Magnificent Toll and the Capital Heavy Toll, they both have a floor. So moat is just the baseline of quality. It's not what makes the free surfer special.
Right. The magic is in the second half of safety.
The ceiling.
The ceiling, exactly. Or unmanaged upside. Because the growth of a free surfer rides in for free on a secular wave, it asks absolutely no decision of the management team.
No decision at all.
None. There is no strategic runway to judge, no risky multi-billion dollar acquisition needed to secure that growth. The upside manages itself.
Almost like owning a self-driving car where you don't even have to punch in the destination.
I love that analogy.
Yeah, you can't crash it and you can't get lost because you aren't the one steering. For you listening right now, think about the profound peace of mind in knowing the upside of your investment literally cannot be squandered by human error.
Right.
The management team could practically go on vacation for a year, and the company would still grow at double digits because the world just keeps swiping their credit cards.
That is the absolute essence of unmanaged upside. Nothing can go wrong by collapse because of the floor, and nothing can go wrong by mismanagement of the core growth engine, because the engine runs on secular trends, not managerial genius.
Okay, hold on. Let's attack the logic here for a second.
Okay, let's do it.
If they aren't spending any money to grow, their bank accounts must be absolutely overflowing.
Oh, they are.
And cash doesn't just sit there in a vacuum. Don't CEOs inevitably get, I don't know, bored or ego-driven and do something stupid with all that extra money?
You've just identified the single greatest and perhaps the only remaining risk in a free surfer.
Oh.
The framework distinguishes between the engine and the exhaust. The growth engine of a free surfer has virtually zero execution risk, as we established. But the exhaust, the massive, unavoidable surplus of cash overflowing from the toll, carries huge risk.
Because management is forced to do something with it. They had to allocate it.
Exactly. If a toll cannot reinvest that massive surplus back into its own highly profitable business, simply because the business is so capital light, it doesn't need the money to grow. Management has to decide what to do with the exhaust.
Right.
They can buy back stock or pay dividends, which is great. But the temptation is always to reach past their natural limit, to try and build an empire, buy a new base of operations.
The S&P Global acquisition of IHS Market is like the perfect cautionary tale from the sources here.
It really is.
Because S&P Global is a classic free surfer. They rate bonds, they have a massive moat, but they took their exhaust and paid $44 billion for IHS Market.
Yeah.
And let's break down the math on why that was so devastating. Think of return on invested capital, or ROIC, as a fraction.
Right.
A free surfer has a massive numerator, which is huge cash flow, and a tiny denominator because they barely need any capital to operate, so the return is huge, sometimes 50 or 60%. But when S&P bought IHS Market, they suddenly bolted a massive $44 billion number onto the bottom of that fraction.
The mechanics of that fraction are everything. When you inflate the denominator that drastically, the math just collapses.
Yeah.
The cash flow went up a little bit, sure, but the capital required to generate it went up exponentially. Their return on invested capital plummeted from an incredibly elite 57% down to an agonizingly average 10%.
Wow.
They basically took a perfect frictionless engine and bolted a heavy, incredibly expensive trailer to the back of it.
So the free surfer removes risk from the engine, not the exhaust.
Correct.
Management can still make terrible decisions with the surplus cash, which is why share buybacks are often the preferred route for these companies. It just shrinks the share count and avoids the whole empire building trap.
Yep.
But as long as they don't do something foolish with the exhaust, the core compounding of the original toll remains completely undisturbed. And that brings us to the underlying physics of why this compounding is so powerful.
Right. The mathematical law of the free surfer is incredibly elegant. Cash flow, the numerator we just discussed, rises continuously, while invested capital, the denominator, stands completely still.
Let's make sure everyone understands this, because it's kind of the key of the whole framework. Let's compare the mechanics of Union Pacific again to a company like Visa.
Okay. Union Pacific wants to grow its revenue. The economy is expanding. More goods need to move.
Okay.
To capture that growth, they have to physically lay new steel tracks, purchase massive new diesel locomotives, hire thousands of engineers. Their revenue grows, yes, but their invested capital base, the denominator, grows right along with it, or even faster.
So they're constantly buying a larger, heavier machine.
Right, which drags down the rate of return on every single new dollar they deploy.
And then look at Visa.
Visa just waits. They wait for a new fintech startup to launch in London, or a new e-commerce platform to take off in Tokyo. When those platforms launch, their transactions are instantly automatically routed through Visa's existing, already paid-for digital rails. Visa's revenue goes up immediately, but they didn't have to add any new physical assets to their balance sheet to process those extra bytes of data. The machine stays the exact same size, it costs virtually nothing extra to run, but it earns vastly more money.
It's inherited arbitrage, not optimization.
Fundamentally, yes.
But wait, if this is so foolproof and perfect, why doesn't every single investor just buy Free Surfers and ignore everything else? I mean, if you're listening to this, hoping to find a secret stock that will make you insanely rich overnight, this isn't the stock for you, is it?
No, and that's the ultimate irony of the Free Surfer. You do not own it for maximum theoretical yield. The return on a Free Surfer is structurally capped at what the framework calls a satisfactory level, so typically compounding around 12 to 15% a year.
Why is it capped? If the growth is free, shouldn't the return be, I don't know, infinite?
Well, it's capped because the very capital lightness that makes their growth free also prevents the business from absorbing its own massive surplus.
Right, the exhaust problem.
Exactly, because they can't reinvest that mountain of cash back into the business at 50% returns. There's just literally nothing to spend it on. They have to return it to shareholders or buy other things. They simply can't deploy enough capital to compound the entire value of the enterprise at 30 or 40% year over year.
Let's unpack how this compares to other investing philosophies, because I think it explains the psychology of why this works. Take classic Graham value investing, you know, the Benjamin Graham style of buying a dollar for 70 cents.
Right.
Why is a Free Surfer better than that?
Well, Graham value is fundamentally flawed for a long-term investor because it's just a one-time harvest. Yes, it has a bounded downside because you bought the asset incredibly cheap, but the upside is totally finite.
You're just waiting for the gap to close.
Right. You wait for the market to realize the company is worth a dollar, the price closes that 30-cent gap, and then the game is over. You have to sell it, pay taxes, and go out and find another undervalued company. It requires constant decision-making and constant friction.
Okay, what about the growth guys? The investors who use GARP, growth at a reasonable price. They're buying growing companies, not dying cigar boats.
JARP is dangerous because it ignores the mechanism of the growth. JARP investors buy growth, but they often do so without requiring a structural moat or choke point.
Okay.
That means you have unbounded downside if your thesis is wrong.
Mm.
But more importantly, the growth you are buying carries massive execution risk because it's almost always mechanical B.
Growth that must be bought, fought for, and steered.
Right.
If you're a GARP investor, you are sweating over every single quarterly earnings call. You are praying the CEO doesn't fumble the product launch or get outflanked by a competitor. You are buying an obligation for human beings to perform flawlessly under pressure.
Exactly. And that brings us back to you, the listener, and the psychology of risk. We live in a financial world full of immense execution risk, full of CEOs overpaying for acquisitions, full of investors constantly chasing maximum theoretical returns. And ironically, chasing that maximum yield is exactly what leads to the permanent loss of capital that Chris Hahn warns about.
So in a world full of that anxiety, earning 12 to 15% compounded steadily for decades without losing a single minute of sleep is just a massive life-changing victory.
Totally.
You do not own a Free Surfer for the absolute maximum you could theoretically make on a spreadsheet. You own it for the most capital you can hold safely, without anxiety.
It's a profound shift in objective. It prioritizes absolute certainty and peace of mind over maximum theoretical yield. It acknowledges that human error is the greatest destroyer of wealth, and it seeks to mathematically eliminate human error from the growth equation.
And to prove the real-world value of this philosophy, let's go back to where we started. Chris Hahn. His own career arc perfectly mirrors the transition from mechanical growth to free growth.
It is a really striking parallel. Chris Hahn didn't start his career buying quiet, peaceful toolkeepers. He began in Europe as a famously confrontational activist investor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was the guy forcing boards of directors out, aggressively blocking bad mergers, demanding companies break themselves apart to unlock shareholder value.
That sounds absolutely exhausting. You're constantly at war.
It is the purest possible form of mechanical B. It is growth and value creation that must be forcefully, violently steered by the shareholder against heavy resistance from the company itself.
Right.
It requires constant high-stress decision-making and endless legal battles.
I love the poetry of this evolution because Hahn literally climbed the spectrum of capital absorption over his career.
He really did.
He moved from exhausting himself trying to force value gaps open with a crowbar to simply holding Free Surfers like Visa, Moody's, S&P Global. He now owns assets where the gifts arrive entirely on their own. It just shows that as a person's scarcest resource becomes their own peace of mind, their portfolio eventually reflects that.
He fundamentally shifted his role. He went from trying to be the engine that drives the value to simply owning the toll booth and letting the world do the driving for him.
So let's recap the core takeaway here for everyone. The free surfer is that rare, moated, structural toll whose growth is free, driven by secular waves, and asks absolutely no decision of management to acquire it.
Right.
You don't own it, so you can brag at dinner parties about a massive short-term 500% gain on a risky tech startup. You own it for the nights you spend, not checking the stock ticker. You own it for the peace of mind.
This content is educational and reflects a personal analytical framework. It does not constitute investment advice. And as we wrap up, this framework raises a much broader question that extends far beyond just stock portfolios.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the ultimate luxury in investing is finding a system where growth happens automatically without agonizing choices or execution risk, well, how much of the stress in our own daily lives and careers comes from constantly choosing capital-heavy mechanical paths?
That is a fascinating way to look at it.
Yeah. Right. Where could you build a personal free surfer choke point in your own life? Like a skill, a network, a system, so that your success rides in on a wave rather than relying on your daily exhaustion?
That is a phenomenal question. We all want a clean, simple path forward without the constant anxiety of steering. Building your own free surfer might just be the closest thing to it. If you want to explore this more, definitely check out the article, The Stock You Can Sleep On, at averagingup.com. Until next time, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.